When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Sons of a Gun, a podcast about the DC Universe. I'm Alex Gunn.
I'm Justin Gigante.
I'm Pete. Gunn. Also Pete Gunn. And we are going to be talking about The Penguin, Episode 5, Homecoming. Mm-hmm. If you haven't watched it on HBO and Max, do go check it out. We are going to spoil it. But before we get into that, I just want to mention, just so you guys know, I was at New York Comic Con this weekend and I saw Dad. I was in the crowd. He gave me like a weirdly bad seat in his panel, but I waved and I was like, Dad, it's me. It's me. And I think he looked in my direction and he probably like thought hi to you guys, his other sons.
He did wave at you because I was out to dinner with him after and he said that he definitely waved to you.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, where did you go? You didn't go to our favorite restaurant, of course, Olive Garden in Times Square.
No, we would never go there without you.
What a dining experience that is.
But man, I'm so full of bread sticks.
Oh, God damn it. All right, you know what? I can't deal with this anymore. Let's talk about The Penguin instead. And again, spoiler warning here, broad strokes of the episode. Some big moves going down from our various factions after Sophia gassed the entire Falcone family last episode, except for Johnny Vitti and Gia Vitti. She is torturing Johnny Vitti for most of the episode to try to get some money. Turns out the reason is she's going to completely remake the Falcone family as the Gigante family in honor of her mom. I can't believe that thing that I threw out. This is not even plussing myself up. I was like, last episode, I was like, maybe they'll call her Sophia Gigante, and then they did. So there you go.
It is weird that you said that, because when you had said that, and I was like, I must have taken it as real. Because when they revealed it in the episode, I was like, I know. I was like, oh, wait, Alex just said that. That's not a fact.
When I said it.
Are you watching ahead, Alex? Is that
no,
how you...
here's the thing. Is when I said it cheating? In the last episode, legitimately, this is not a lie, in my head, I was like, that was the stupidest thing I have ever said out loud in my entire life. That's never going to happen in a million years. And that it did. So there you go.
Well, let me say this. I think this is perhaps an indicator of how maybe you're concerned with like furs and names. As soon as they showed up for the Maroney family swap with the son, I was like, they're going to lay him on fire. I knew immediately. And I was like, oh, yeah. I'm fucked up that I assumed that right out of the
gate. Well, all right. Just back to the recap. Sorry, I got distracted there. But she ends up killing Johnny Vitti in front of all his soldiers and saying they're going to have a new type of family under the Gigante family. It is going to be more family. It's not going to be at the top and that everybody works for them. She, by the end of the episode, also goes to Sal Maroney, Mr. Krabs himself, who has escaped from prison, and they team up to kill not the Batman, but the Penguin by the end of the episode. Meanwhile, to jump back, as Justin mentioned with that track, Oz takes Taj Maroney, the son of Sal and Nadia Maroney, hostage to try to get his shrooms back. He just wants his shrooms. That's all he wants.
Yeah.
But in the process, he pays a guard to try to kill Sal, which is how Sal kills the guard instead, presumably, and escapes from prison. And
what a turnaround.
Yeah, big ups for Sal Maroney. And Nadia Maroney and Taj Maroney end up going in a ball of flames after they betray him in the handoff. All of the mushrooms, or most of them, are destroyed in the process. But while that is going on, Vic is taking care of Deirdre, who is Oz's mom. takes her to Crown Point, hides her away. Seems like Squid might have an idea where they're staying. Uh-oh, Squid's back. And by the end of the episode, Oz finds his own penguin cave, like the Bat Cave underneath Gotham City, the old trolley station.
Oh, like the Bat Cave. I see what that is like.
And that's
I thought traditionally, yeah. The traditional home of penguins is caves. They
the
love
traditional
being...
home of penguins is train stations, I believe, because yeah. That's where he makes his home. So
it makes total sense.
There is, as you can probably tell from the recap, so much going on this episode. This to me, and I know we've been kind of talking about this all along, but this to me felt like, in a surprising way, we are not so slowly anymore walking towards, yes, this is Gotham City. This is recognizable as Gotham City, down to Oswald making these big moves where he's just killing people. Sophia straight up looks like a Batman villain now. And I know I was joking about it before, but that was a one-to-one scene with the big, like, why don't we team up us two villains and kill the Penguin?
Well, and I will say I thought it was really cool the way they did that, because she was able, they called him Oz, yeah. She was able to become a straight up Batman villain just with her acting choices and some wardrobe and eye makeup. Mm-hmm. And I would think that was really well done from a performance point of view. And the same, I mean, this episode was about sort of, like you're saying, Alex, becoming other things. All the characters are becoming pulp characters, essentially. It struck me in this episode that everything feels like it's drawn by Eduardo Risso, the comic book artist from 100 Bullets and a ton of Batman stories. Just like violent, but very clean lines and sharp characters. And that's what the show sort of became in this episode, I feel like.
Yeah, it felt like Sophia did a little Cruella de Vil there with the mink coat and, you know.
No, that was made from the mob, her family members that she killed.
No, man.
There was 101 of them that she skinned and made into a coat. You missed that scene, Pete?
I did. I missed that one.
Man, that's too bad.
Sophia Gigant. Sophia Gigant. No.
Anyways, you left out in the recap super important scene where Oz said goodbye to his car. He lit it on fire, said a little
prayer. I'm glad you called it out,
just
Pete.
Like, oh man, that's tough to say goodbye to a sweet chariot, you know.
R.I.P. to the Oserati.
Yeah, the Oserati.
I do appreciate. I mean, and this came out in this scene and throughout the episode, even in the midst of these wild, intense circumstances, there's still humor in the show. Like, I think we talked about that was missing a little bit in the last episode because everything was so serious. It was back here, and I think it's the presence of Colin Farrell as Oz. You know, I'll probably annoyingly mention this several times, but at New York Comic Con, I also went to the Penguin panel, and they had some interesting things, I thought, to say about this. One of the things that Lauren LeFranc, the showrunner, mentioned is when she was trying to break down the show and when she was trying to start writing things, she would take these long walks and sort of like talk as Oz in her head. And one of the things she called out was very specifically, like, she wanted to find that level between his intensity and his humor. Like, she specifically called out his sense of humor was a thing that she wanted to tackle exactly right. And I think that comes out in this episode in a big way.
When she was on those walks, did she talk about how dark she's making the show and how maybe she's...
She imagined people around her bursting into flames and burning to ash.
Yeah, and then she was like, hey, what's the worst way you could lose your parents? Oh, being forced to sleep in a greenhouse and then wake up the next day and they're all gassed to death?
I don't know. That's kind of, that's not the worst way.
And then the lady who was nice to you just waves as she goes and gets taken away and maybe put with a foster family or maybe worse.
Wow. You said a lot of controversial things.
You're adding some of that darkness.
It was a horrible moment where it was just like a background thing.
There's nothing wrong. There's nothing wrong, I want to clarify, with foster families, all right? That is something that can happen. So don't frame it as at or worse.
It's okay to sleep in a greenhouse, too. Yeah. That's a great...
Not when your family's getting murdered.
Hard to wake up there. I mean, that's a great time to sleep in the greenhouse, I would
say. Let me ask you a question, Pete. This is specifically for you. Justin, don't answer this one because I'm sure you know the answer. If a green man sleeps in the greenhouse and a red man sleeps in a red house, who sleeps in the White House?
This is dumb.
The president.
The president.
There you go. Anything
but is it, the answer is also white man, which is what the usually.
Yeah, usually. Most of the time.
What's happening now? This has gotten real weird.
But so, hopefully not this next time.
Yes, nice. Agreed. The
recover from that.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to. We were talking about how Oz is balancing humor and intense violence, and you know, just to shout out the acting that Colin Farrell is doing here is really good. And there are small moments that he's doing. There's a lot of broad moments, like how he says the word "woik." He says the word "woik" in a way where I'm like, "Wow, that is wild, my man." Mm-hmm. But at the same time, so there's big moments, broad moments like that. But then there are these subtle moments when he's watching the mother, Mama Moroni, and her son burn. There's just the way he looks. I was like, ah, that's really an interesting way of doing that he found there. And he's really doing a lot.
He has that slow smile as they pan in on him where he's enjoying it. And it contrasts really nicely with like the scene with Eve Carlo, who is rapidly becoming a really fascinating character in terms of the move that she's making, particularly this episode, where she clearly objects to everything that Oz is doing. He's bringing the heat down on her and her girls, and she doesn't like that. And they get that breakup scene where she's both like, it feels like she's playing both sides of, no, I'm only going to be with you when you're on the up swing and you can protect me, but also I'll always be with you, baby. And she's kind of playing him the same way that he plays everybody else. But the reason I brought this up in reference to Colin Farrell is like the script has him seething with rage, but also sadness at the same time because he's like, my girlfriend broke up with me.
That moment's really powerful because he's like mad at himself, mad at what's going on. And he's like saying stupid, stupid, stupid. And instead of her just being like, yeah, you're stupid, get the fuck out of here, she does comfort him and be like, hey, you know, it's going to be all right, which I thought showed a little bit where she was like, I can't do this. You're dead. You know, this is over. But still was nice enough to kind of talk him down off the ledge a little bit. So, yeah, I thought that was there's a lot of great kind of acting choices and a lot of human moments in the sea of this fucking madness where Sophia's just killing people willy-nilly. Like, hey, I thought Johnny was going to make it a little bit longer than that.
Before we move on, though, I want to say I sort of agree with Alex. I think she plays him in that relationship scene. You see her flip a switch, and she's like, no, it's okay. And I don't know what her end game is. We don't know enough about, I guess, what she wants. But it definitely does feel like she's playing him a bit. That scene was the most straight out of a Sopranos script of the show, perhaps, so far. When he throws that vase out, or that lamp, I'm like, okay, we get it. You've watched some Sopranos here.
If we do want to jump over and talk about Johnny Vitti, this is something that immediately occurred to me on watching the episode that I wanted to ask you guys about. Were you also pretty upset that we ended the last episode with, hey, Johnny, put your pants on, and he's not wearing pants as soon as we see him?
Mm. Yes. I think that's called foreshadowing.
Oh, Alex. Nope. That's foreskinning, I believe.
Is Wow. Well, and while we're talking about this, when Oz goes to meet Sal, he says, Sal, put your dick away. And my question is, we don't see with a shot, was Sal's dick out when they were having that conversation?
I think so. Everybody is always telling the truth on this show, so there's no reason to
talk about that. A power play.
Yeah. By the way, Pete, I know it's past 9 o'clock when we're taping, so it's past your bedtime. Are you excited that you stayed up for this?
No, part of me just died inside with your foreskin joke there.
Really? I came alive. I feel like I just came alive.
I'll cut it out.
Well, don't cut the whole thing.
Yeah.
Just a little.
Yeah, I'll just give it a little snip. Anyway, I do think the Johnny Vitti stuff was great and really well done because we got so much information here. The torture scenes are definitely like I don't know what the expression is, but like the gloves are off. That's what the expression is. The gloves are off with Sophia at this point. Now that she's gassed everybody, she's like, nope, I'm going to lock you in the family mausoleum and torture you as much as I want to get the information that I want. But the stuff that we get from him here is really interesting in terms of laying out that Isabella wanted to leave, tried to leave, couldn't leave because of the kids, came back, and then was going to leave that next time with the kids, and Johnny Vitti was going to help her.
Yeah.
So the thing that I thought was so interesting was the cyclical nature of that scene, and again, to plus up everybody about the acting, how Christine Milioti plays that, going from, like, she starts to get into it and start to be like, you get a sense of maybe she's not going to be like Johnny Vitti's number one fan, but maybe being like, okay, I have broken him enough that I can do something with this. I can mold him into something. But the second that he said, she turns back on it and was like, but you stayed. I think that's not a breaking point for her. That's more her like poking and prodding at him. And then the turning point is like, I can help you. I can give you respect. When he says that, she's like, oh, nope, you're dead. You're 100% dead. I'm going to get what I need from you. And then what she actually needs is to kill him in front of everybody to show the amount of power she's wielding.
You think she had that plan in that moment?
I think so. I think I saw a hardening in Christine Milioti's eyes as soon as she said that.
I agree with you. I do think, but before that, I think he was actually reaching her a little bit.
Yeah.
And so it struck me in that scene that is Sophia the other side of the Oz coin in that she's also sort of like improvising all the time. Mm-hmm. She's like, she gasses the family, then she's doing this, then she moves into the, bringing, like, basically unionizing the mafia of Gotham by saying, like, you guys like money? Here it is.
Yeah, you should get paid for what you're worth, yeah.
And then she's then goes to Maroni, like, she must have heard about the death of the rest of the Maroni family and goes to him, like, that was that her plan the whole time?
Or was she just going to kill him? It seemed, because she was... You know, she was talking about why she, you know, like, I need this money, and then we got to see what it was for. And I do think that she's smarter than Oz and being more kind of planned out and malicious. And I think it seeing her kind of become the supervillain in this episode was really awesome, because when she's in that mausoleum kind of doing the villain monologue, there was this moment where she was like, don't talk about my mother, you know, and there was this kind of like, oh, shit, Johnny, like, I don't think you should keep talking about her mom. But he kept pushing the issue, and there was a moment of her kind of softening again before she kind of was like, yo, fuck this, he's dead to me, that Alex was talking about, that I just think that, like, just really impressive all around. You know, the fact that, like, even though he was kind of chained up, he still had this, like, key bit of information, and it was just so well delivered.
Well, to bounce off of what you were saying, Justin, a little bit, I think there's an argument to be made in this episode that Sophia is the Penguin or could be the Penguin as well. Like, I don't think they're going to call her the Penguin at any point, but... particularly that scene of when she's looking at her mom's clothes and she's wearing the tuxedo shirt or whatever it is that kind of looks very penguinish. Then she gets that ruffled out hair that again sort of looks like birdish in a way. I think they're certainly doing her up like that. I've seen folks call out online, and we could probably talk about all the stuff with Dr. Julian Rush in a second, but that's sort of a gender flipped.
It's a reverse Harley.
Yeah, it's a reverse Harley.
That's what I thought. When he shows up, I was like, this is very strange. And I was like, this is a reverse Harley situation. And then that makes her the Joker there. And I think that's sort of the way that she kills Johnny Vitti. It depends on what you think of the Joker, the many iterations of the Joker. Is he performative, or is he as insane as he is in some of the portrayals of him? If you believe the Joker is a bit performative, the way that he moves through things, like that's more so in the comics, I think. I think she's very much a Joker analog here. And Julian being like, I want to feel free like you do. I was like, okay, put on the little suit and feed the hyenas.
Yeah, just to wrap up the Penguin thing a little bit, I do think, and this is getting a little niche-y, but Addison Cobblepot, who is the daughter of Oswald Cobblepot in the comics, she recently popped up in the Penguin series by Tom King, and, oh my God, I'm blanking on who was the artist for that. It wasn't Jorge Fornes, but whatever it is, the kids of the Penguin are there, And yeah. she looks a lot like that in this episode as yeah. well. So I think you're right about the Joker Harley stuff. But I don't know. I immediately went to Addison Cobblepot there. And I don't, to be clear, I don't think she's his daughter or anything like that. But I do think there's a bit of visual reference going on with that. The Dr. Julian Rush thing doesn't work for me. Like him standing in the back of that room being like, what is he doing here? Is he like, he's the mob's therapist? What is happening?
Well, and plus his therapy he's on training.
The crew now, it seems like he's one of the henchmen.
Oh, big time. He's who Johnny Vitti thought he was, but it's actually Julian Rush is the right hand. But the way he walks up to her, he's like, I use my therapy powers to see that you probably were the ones that gassed your parent for your family. I was like, what the?
Well, that's the thing. That's pretty obvious. You know, like she's the only survivor. She, you know, the fact that the commissioner was just like, hey, I'm going to talk to you for a second and then I'm going to immediately let you off the hook when you start drilling me. I was like, that can't be her only interrogation, right? She woke up in a house full of murder people and nobody's questioning her at all.
That's Gotham, baby.
Well, but I mean, she pins it like they can't find Johnny Vitti. And so it's like, well, he did it and ran off is what she implicates him in that.
And but now
and
he's
that's enough
shot in the head in her house. I mean, how many more bodies in her house where the cops don't?
I bet for that second around. Murder, I bet for that Johnny Vitti murder, she didn't call the cops. She probably didn't ring him up and be like, hey, there's a corpse here at my table.
Yeah. Oh, my God. There's been a shooting. It was me. Before I forget, just to mention about that actor, that guy is Con O'Neill, the guy who talks like this with the very high, reedy voice. If you watch Our Flag Means Death on Max, he was Izzy Hands, the right-hand man of Blackbeard on that show. Mm. He's been in a bunch of other things. But more relevant to this, he was also in The Batman as Chief Mackenzie Bock. He only appeared, if I remember correctly, in a couple of scenes. He was in the scene where Batman is in the Gotham PD and they've captured him. He doesn't like vigilantes at all. And that's the one where like all the cops are on Batman and he's pushing and punching them away.
Yeah, yeah.
And eventually he escapes thanks to Jim Gordon. So he showed up that, and then he shows up at the end to sort of like help establish the status quo. But I think like he is here, he is a symbol of the corrupt police department that eventually will be led by Jim Gordon.
And I also think that he's a symbol for how important having lozenges in your jacket pocket is, because somebody it's like reverse product placement where you're like, yeah, can that guy get a lozenge, please?
And he just sounds like that, by the way. Like that is just what his voice has always sounded
yeah,
like.
Yeah, man. Sometimes, you know.
Sometimes you gotta
just
have an interesting
take it
voice.
Easy on him. You know, he was just that's how he talks, bro.
Yeah, well, I was just saying that if a difficult podcast guest, all I'm saying. Let me ask you this. How many times do you think we're gonna hear Oz say, "It's just you and me now, kid"?
A bunch.
Has he said it every episode? It should be just a sign he holds up, Wile E. Coyote style.
Yeah. It should actually be a sign that'd be like, good, Vic, kid. I'm going to kill you in episode 8, Vic. Just so you know.
Here's the thing. Is he going to, because I was like, he's definitely going to kill him based on that. That would be just sad and not dramatic, especially if they're going to do more of this or somehow make these characters progress out of this season. If he wrongs Vic, if he fully turns on him, Vic is a great antagonist for the future. Because Vic is like a scrappy penguin.
There's no way he's making it out alive. He's just not.
Wow.
If Penguin shoots Vic just like randomly in one of these episodes, I'm going to be really fucking brokenhearted about that. That would.
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple of different indicators that Vic is not long for this world in this episode alone. One that I'd point to is the very pointed scene where they're hanging out in the apartment in Crown Point. And Vic asks him what happened to his brothers, and Oz pauses and just like, the city took him. And I was like, all right, you killed them.
Perfect. You definitely something.
He's probably talking about the foster system where they just come and take his
away. Yeah. What is your deal, man?
Yikes.
She murdered the parents of this child and then just waved as the kid was taken away to God knows where.
Yes, I'm not going to disagree with that, but do not go in on the Foster
sister. The fact that it was just this background moment really bothers me because this show is fucked up, man.
Yeah.
Just fucked up.
Good. Wow. So your big takeaway is that Gotham City's a fucked up place? Interesting. Yeah. Strong
to have
take.
Children.
What a way you've absorbed the content. It's really, really taking it in.
Wait, I just want to finish up what I was saying, though, about indicators that Vic is going to die. So there is that. I think Oz definitely did something to his brothers, so he's not going to have too much of a compunction about doing something to Vic if the chips are down, if that is something that is going to push him into the position of Gotham City Kingpin. But also, everything that's been set up here in terms of taking Deirdre, the only thing that Oz seems to care about actually in the entire world, to Crown Point, getting Squid's eyes on her, that is definitely going to send Sophia and Sal Moroni their way. Deirdre might not be long for this world as well. And if something happens to Deirdre because of Vic, that is absolutely going to make Oz turn on him.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If that's the Vic's arc where he gets plucked out of Crown Point to become the Penguin's like right-hand man, and then he gets killed because the Penguin's mom accidentally died, it's like, yo, that's not an arc. Like, something, it can't just be he shows up for work one day and he's like, it's just you and me, kid. Bang. Now it's just me, kid. Like, it's not going to be the way it's going to go. There's got to be more to it than that.
No, it's going to be a tragic trolley accident because, you know, the lesson's going to be you can't be playing around on trolley tracks.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to be a sort of thing, and this is just to throw this out there, that, like, Vic is going to be tied to some trolley tracks, and then there's three other people that are going to be tied to some trolley tracks. And
three
Oz
other
is gonna have to, yeah.
Choose. Oz he's going to have to choose. Choose. Yeah.
If only there was a name for that sort of problem. A Vic problem, perhaps.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
are you done?
No, there's still more.
Yeah, there is more to talk about. Should we talk about the Moronis at all? I want to throw out the most unnecessary, not an Easter egg possible, but...
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm forgetting his name, but Arya Shah Gassemi, who plays Taj, the guy who is the son who gets taken hostage. Yep. He was on a show called Legacies on the CW. I'll get back to that in a second. In this episode, when we find him in the tattoo shop, he's getting a Phoenix tattoo on his back, which clearly is foreshadowing that he's going to get set on fire by the end of the episode. But in Legacies, he was one of the main characters, and he comes in as like a non-supernatural being in the supernatural school for kids. And eventually, at the end of the first season, the big reveal is he is a phoenix, and that plays a major part throughout the entire series. So as a fan of Legacies, I was like, that's pretty funny.
Oh, that's really cool. That could also be known as a coincidence.
Yes. Rather, not
the
an
ultimate Easter egg.
Easter coincidence.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. What a coincidence. I found an egg here. I found an egg in this robin's nest.
I also thought it was weird that, like, Oz, like, really cared about the mushrooms for some reason. But then when he found his, like, palace, he was like, oh, you know, it's great for growing down here, mushrooms. I was like, oh, that's why you cared about the mushrooms.
Well, here's a bone I guess I have to pick. I don't know who the horticulturalist consultant that Oz is working with, but... give those mushrooms a chance. Don't just trash them immediately, assuming they're all dead. And nice to find the ones in the bucket. But also, he's like, get them in the heat, and then eventually we'll grow them in this freezing cold trolley place, which on the totally other side of the show, Johnny Vitti's underground for like a minute. He's like, I'm going to die in this cold. I'm going to die in this cold.
But she and dumps it's like, water what? On him to make it colder.
Yeah, I know, but he's just in a room. Like, it's not like, was it Arctic temperatures down there? And they're in the same underground area, and they're like, let's grow these warm mushrooms here. I was like, this is not making sense environmentally.
They are, I agree with you. They are remarkably inconsistent about the mushrooms. From the first, pretty much the first scene they show them off, where Sophia is like, don't even touch them. That could ruin the whole batch. Now, here, let me tear off this mushroom and show it to you. And I was like, what? You just said don't do that. And then everybody's taking the mushrooms, trucking them around literally all over the city. And it isn't until they get hit with fire suppressant that they turn into dust, except for two that are in buckets. They didn't put the rest in buckets, just two of these fragile mushrooms they put in buckets. Also, why did they take them and put them in a truck to begin with?
Also, like,
to bring him to Oz.
Oz doesn't know how to grow mushrooms or even get the drug, because they talked about how they tweaked it and made it so special. It seemed complicated. Mm-hmm. Why does Oz think, like, just having a, two buckets of mushrooms, he would have
I'm
to learn.
I'm not laughing at you. It's funny when you say it out loud.
It would just be so complicated to learn how to turn those mushrooms into a super drug called Bliss.
Well, it's just, he just has to pick the little red crystals off the top. It's easy.
Yeah, then you put
according
them in
the file. And then you sell them, yeah. Mm-hmm. And Vic drops them, and then a nice lady comes and picks them up, his true love.
where is Roxy, huh?
Yeah, she's just living it up in California. California.
Oh, no, that's Graciela. Graciela.
Oh, that's Graciela.
Roxy is the cam girl. Roxy's true love.
Let me ask you this. Did you notice the rat that knows karate in the trolley area? Did you notice that?
I was looking. Don't play with my emotions.
Because you know who likes mushrooms? Turtles. Yeah,
on their pizza. Yeah.
They're about to get fucked up. Donatello's done knowing machines. He's going to be on Bliss from now on.
Dude, or he's going to know machines even better.
Wow.
What do you think the utility is? I mean, I think obviously we're going to see. They were very blatant about it. But what do you think the utility is of this trolley station? Because they're very specific about, like, there are tunnels that go everywhere throughout the city.
Yeah. So they can deal drugs and just kind of use the tunnels. Yeah.
Right.
Well, and I think what we're going to get is sort of a lot of running and hiding, because now that the other families have consolidated, and literally with the entire goal of killing Oz, like, he's going to be hunted. And so I think they get to play hide and seek for the next, at least the next episode is my prediction.
Yeah. Do you think it connects with the Batcave at all? Are they going to, like, sort of walk by and...
Yeah, if Bruce Wayne doesn't have one kind of, like, just monitor down there or something to kind of... I mean, come on, right?
They're just going to pass by. You remember that scene from, I'm forgetting which Spider-Man movie, when they fight... It's one of the Amazing Spider-Man movies where Stan Lee is on headphones in a record shop and they fight in the background behind him and he doesn't notice.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be the same thing. Robert Pattinson listening to some Nirvana. He can't hear them. They're just, like, fighting in the background. It's
going
to be fun.
While you're talking about having headphones on, shouts to that. I thought that scene was really cool when they capture Taj.
Yeah, and the tattoo
shop. At the beginning. That was very cool. And then the other scene that visually slash sort of the thematic or physical connection they made is she throws the money on the table when she's uniting, when she's getting her family, unionizing her mom family. It's right there next to Johnny Vitti's corpse, and all of the mob guys sort of attack it like wolves after the alpha dog has been killed and just grab the money in the center of the table. I thought that was a really nice, I don't know, metaphor that they sort of slide in there in a cool way.
Yeah, and I hope that they get some time afterwards to sit one-on-one with Dr. Julian Rush and sort of like break down the whole situation and really talk about what it meant to them, you know?
So, Rocco, how are you dealing with your PTSD from being the guy next to Johnny Vitti when he was shot? Any updates there? I'm so happy being here to feel truly free with my former patient and potential lover, Sophia Gigante. I'm Julian Gigante.
A couple of things just to mention, since we've been talking around them, that came from the panel and I think they're relevant here. One, Lauren LeFranc talked about the costuming for Sophia, and this seemed directly relevant to the episode that was coming up. The panel was before this episode aired, where she was saying, yeah, very specifically, like you can watch from the first episode to now, she goes from wearing this high-collared stuff to lower, 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 to now she's wearing, like, negligees with a fur coat hanging off of one
scars
shoulder.
Out. I think
yeah, scars out.
Feels
yeah, important. Scars out, right? Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that I thought relevant to our discussion here, Colin Farrell in particular was pushing very hard that the main relationship for him on the show is between Oz and his mother, Deirdre. So that certainly, I think...
That was a creepy-ass scene when he curled up in bed with her.
They're very close.
Very close.
Yeah. I think it points to more to come on that, and whatever happened to Oz's brothers, I think, is going to be pretty upsetting.
Yes, lots more upsetting to come, I predict, as well.
Yeah, I did, you know, just to kind of circle back to the humor of it, it was funny when Oz was on the phone, he was like, cooked. Oh, that's a Funny you say that. Have you talked to your wife lately? I was like, oh, Jesus, man. Come on, dude.
Yeah. And when the way he twists the knife, it was only getting him into trouble. Unnecessary to do that.
Yeah.
Oh, I do have one more question about Deirdre. So when Vic finds her, a very sad scene where, like, the house is a mess, the oven is still on, she's lying in her bed, barely dressed. Once she finally starts to get it together, he asks her about a big bruise on her arm, and she says, I fell. Maybe I was pushed. And then she laughs. What do you think happened there?
I don't know.
She's out of her gourd, and she runs into shit, is what it seems like.
Well, I would think the implication is more that Oz did it,
mm-hmm.
or something, like, and Oz hurts the people that he claims to love the most, and again, setting up that Vic is in the crosshairs.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of what I took away from it as well, but I guess we will see. Any other notes from the episode?
One thing that it's interesting, the show shifted so hard to Sophia last episode. And then now we have sort of a double protagonist situation here with Sophia and Oz, more so almost splitting time. I think that's really cool, and it's working, especially in a show where we sort of know that no matter what happens, the Penguin's going to walk out of this season alive. None of
Do we know that?
Yeah, I think we can almost guarantee that, but Sophia might not. So giving her sort of equal fare.
I almost feel like it could switch, though, because I'm at this point, I would rather see Sophia kind of be in the Batman movie and Penguin not make it out of this thing.
Yeah, I hear you on that, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think they are definitely going to end with Sophia dead. I feel very confident about Vic dead. I think Deirdre might be dead as well. I think we probably enter
who's
the
alive?
Well, that's the thing, is I think we enter the Batman Part 2 with Oz ostensibly getting everything that he wanted, which is being the king of the Gotham underworld, and having nobody. Like, he can't trust anybody. Yeah. He has no support system. Except for Dr.
Julian
Rush.
You and me, Batman.
Dr. Julian Rush, who's going to come over and be like, I saw you kill your own mom, and I love you now.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And then we get more Sopranos one-on-one therapy sessions. Great.
Everything is not Sopranos, man. You know, just because you recently started
watching
that.
Tell that to the Penguin.
Yeah. Theo Rossi is the Lorraine Bracco of Gotham City. Did I get that right?
I think so.
No idea.
cool. All right. Well, I guess that is it. We did it.
I understand that, like, okay, Gotham's insane and like, but if you call the meeting and then shot the one guy that brought everyone together, I wouldn't be, like, anxious to jump on some money and work for somebody who's clearly, if you fuck, she's like, you're pawns, you're nobodies. Here's some cash. Don't worry, things will be better with me. Like, nothing points to things are going to be better other than the blood money that you're rolling around in.
Hey, I'm a freelancer, so I get it. I'm the same
way. Okay, all right.
When someone's like, you want some money? I'm like, what, yes? What
are we doing? Do literally whatever. It's such a classic Gotham City villain thing, though, right? Like, I killed the other guy. Now come work for me. Here's some money.
I guess so.
Everything's going to get burned down, but that's kind of is what it is. And we've talked about this a lot, but I think that actually ties into, without being the exact plot, but the whole idea of the Long Halloween Dark Victory, the comic books, where it's going from these mob families to these arch supervillains in Gotham City. And that's what Sophia has become. And that's what Gotham becomes, is Two-Face being like, come work for me. We're going to make money. Pew, pew, pew. I'm going to flip my coin and maybe kill you. I don't know. And then a guy is like, if he happens to survive next week, he's with Mr. Freeze and dressed up in a parka and freezing everything. So that's just how the city works from now on, I guess.
I guess I want Gotham to be more of a character in the story. You know what I mean?
What the fuck are you talking? Wow. Would you read a novel, a textbook on TV criticism?
If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about The Penguin. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, Dad, I'll meet you at the Olive Garden. I'll be there. I'll make some reservations on Friday night. I would love it if you'd show up.
It's just you and him, kid. That restaurant's going to take some work.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.